You know how we do it. You.
Welcome. You are now. You are now. You are now. You are now in the village.
What up, y'all? This is your girl, Lady J. What up, y'all? This is your girl, Lady J. Y'all know what to do with us, huh?
You are now in the village, home of Taking It Back Tuesdays. Welcome to the village, the kids' corner, the second helping, and music moments.
It's your girl, Lady J. Recording from the bedroom, from the kitchen table, from the library there. You know how we do it.
This is KK. This is KK. This is KK. You're listening to Bluntly KK.
Welcome to the village. Welcome to the village. It's your man KJ. Tonight I have.
What up, y'all? It's your girl, Lady J.
And of course, in the village, we also got Chance once again via Skype because this is what we do. This is what we do. And of course, this is our first time on Spreecast, everybody. We're actually on right now.
We should probably tweet that or Facebook that or something.
I just Facebooked it and tweeted it. But
there it is.
If you want to go ahead and do the same thing, you should go right ahead and do that. Let people know.
Yes, I will do that. How
about okay. That? So, Village, tonight we're going to talk about creating black wealth. Now, this topic really stems from, you know, us... seeing other cultures do well with wealth, with money, creating money. And Chance and I, Lady J and I, are going to discuss some things that we can do within the black community that can help us out. So let's jump right into this. Okay, so the very first thing that I want to discuss or bring up in creating black wealth is the circulation of our dollar. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Chance, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm just checking because you ain't said nothing.
So, what's up, everybody? I'm here.
Okay, there we go. Just want to make sure. But basically, you know, when we when you look at the circulation of our dollar, it doesn't exactly stay in our community within our businesses very long.
Very long?
Well, I mean, it does stay in there a little bit. You know what I mean? It does stay a little bit. It may circulate one or two times. And that's just off of what I've read. It may circulate one or two times in our community. And that's pretty much it. While I happen to be reading and I read within the Asian community, the Jewish community, things of that nature. Of course, there's all kind of different studies and different things like that. But the consensus was that it circulated between 6 to 9 times within their community, especially the Jewish community. They're very strong about supporting their own businesses and stuff like that. So, you know, what do we do? You know, what do we do to create wealth if we're spending our money outside of businesses that, in a sense, are taking our dollar and keeping it for themselves? I don't know. What do you think?
I'd like to say that I don't think it's really, it goes back to two things, education and the fact that we don't, as a culture, we don't own that many businesses.
Yes, to begin with. That was going to be one of my points. Go ahead.
And the education portion, I think when we talk about one, I think we should define what wealth is, because I look at wealth as something that is our monies that become generational. Versus riches that, you know, somebody can walk around with fat pockets and die tomorrow and leave their family broke. And I think that's the issue, one of the biggest issues in the black community is black people typically don't own anything. We either rent it, we owe some kind of debt on it, and we just don't own our own assets. So, you know, we can't circulate wealth within our community because we owe other people that money that we do create.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think we can't. So the advantage to the Jewish community is this, and even the Asian communities, they can shop for all of their basic necessities in their community. They can go to the Asian grocery store or the Jewish grocery store and buy food. They can go to, you know, the butcher and buy meat. They can go to the dry cleaners and get their stuff dry cleaned. They can rent. Even if they do rent, they rent from someone who owns the house, and the person who owns the house is of their same ethnicity. So the issue with it is that in the African American community, we predominantly, like Chan said, we predominantly rent. We don't own our homes. And we're renting from people who don't live in our community, mm-hmm. or who traditionally don't live in our community. We can't go to the local grocery store to buy food. One, because majority of the African American communities are food deserts, which means that
which is a huge issue in itself. That's a whole other show in itself. But go ahead.
Which is a food desert is within a certain radius from your home. There's not a grocery store that sells fresh produce and fresh fruits and vegetables. So majority of the people live in a food desert. So you can't go to the grocery store and buy food or groceries. And then you can't do things like, you know, if you wanted to go to the cleaners, you can't say, I'm going to go over and see Mrs. Johnson or Mr. Jones over at the cleaners and go get this suit pressed, you know, because it's not owned by us. Even the cleaners that we go to in our neighborhood is ran by an Asian family. So I think we can never build black wealth in our family until we begin to own the property in our community. And then own the businesses in our community.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like you said, to start with that, we have to own the businesses. You know, we have to, and additionally here, we have to be willing to invest in us. We're so quick to be like, oh, we're going to run over to Walmart. And I'm guilty of that. I will admit, I am very guilty of that. Or we'll run to Target or whatever. I'm sure there is a black-owned business that has the same product or something very similar. Is it going to cost you a little more money? Well, yes, because they're a local store. They're like a mom and pop store, so it may cost you a little bit more, but you're still circulating, you're still supporting your community. While, you know, you support Walmart, you know, they're everywhere. They can slang their stuff for literally pennies on the dollar because they'll make it up somewhere else, and it's a collective. So again, you know, I think we need to, number one, these businesses that are black-owned businesses, they need to be loved and supported and nurtured, because it's very hard as it is being a black business owner, but then being a black business owner with no support.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think one of the things that we as African Americans, we get stuck on prices. You know, we don't want to support some black businesses because their prices are higher. You know, we always want to seem to have the cheaper way out of the situation.
Yeah.
You know? not knowing that if we are willing to pay the higher prices in the beginning, the more product that is sold, the prices can be decreased, you know, can go down.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Chance, what do you think?
I think that, you know, I was in deep thought on this, because I think as long as we put more value on the jeans on our butts and the shoes on our feet,
yeah,
what car we have parked outside in the carport instead of whether or not we have a garage to park it in, as long as we put value on things that are not of value per se, they're not investment grade,
mm-hmm.
but they're always pulling money away from us. I think as long as that continues, we're not going to own businesses. I think culturally, and that's the part where the education comes in, because I personally don't know very many black people that own their own businesses. I don't have anybody in my family that owns their own business. I have a pretty big family.
Yeah.
I have a lot of well-educated, well-to-do people in my family, but they all have good jobs. But none of them, you know, have that knowledge on how and what to do to step out and own their own business. And it's like things like doing investing. You know, I would talk to my parents about that, and it was almost as if I was speaking another language.
Right.
When I would talk to them about investing, and I think that is a critical key that is missing in the black community is, I think we have collectively skewed priorities.
Yes.
And you know, I try to not buy anything that's made in China. So I'm very much so willing to pay a little extra. But I've been blessed with the ability to be able to afford to do that. Not everyone can.
Yeah.
But I will say, everybody, if somebody can go out there and buy a pack of buy some Newports, they got a pair of Jordans in their house somewhere, they can afford an insurance policy. They can afford to purchase some stocks or bonds for their children. And pass down some wealth to their children, so when their children get out of college, they're not saddled with tens of thousands of dollars in college debt, car loans, or having to try to figure out how they're going to come up with a massive down payment for a house.
Mm-hmm.
Other cultures, that's what they do. I mean, everyone knows how, you see, when Asian people come to this country, they all shack up in a single home, the entire family, multi-generational, until they have enough money to buy another house.
That's true.
And then they start expanding from there.
Mm-hmm.
Until everybody has their own house. Black people would rather rent. You know, we don't. And I think that's also part of our history. You know, we were a divided people. We were divided through slavery, and I think that part of why we don't work together now is part of that old curse where we were divided and we've kind of stayed divided.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and that makes sense, because if you think about it in reference to, like, let's just think about it in just a time frame. So the Asian community, the Latino community, they have years, and when I say years, I'm not saying like just, you know, 5 or 10 years. I'm saying they have hundreds of years under their belt to be able to learn and pass down traditions and rules and things that you just do in your community. Whereas, you know, we as a community, we're still very young. We're still in, you know, infancy stages in comparison to these other cultures. You know, so the reason why, it makes perfect sense why we can't do what they do, because we don't have the experience to do what they do, and we don't have the longevity underneath our belt to have that experience to be able to do what they do.
Yeah. So let me throw a little bit of historical. Let's talk historical here. I'm not going to go too far back. I mean, we could go far back as President Abraham Lincoln. And before he was assassinated, he actually was trying to set up education as far as money for newly freed slaves.
Mm-hmm.
But before all that was implemented, he was murdered. Okay, so we know that. So let's fast forward a little bit here. Let's talk about Black Wall Street
mm-hmm.
in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Prominent area, black doctors, lawyers, investors, bankers, the whole nine. At that point in history, we were educated in money. We understood money.
Right.
But it was destroyed. Right? And many people know that. Many people pass this story along. They'll tell people. Here's my question here. Have we developed a fear of wealth? Of really accumulating nice things? Have we developed this mentality of we got it, let's go ahead and spend it now before it's gone?
So we've developed, we have never taken on the idea of wealth. We have taken on the idea of having money.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not taken on the idea of wealth, because wealth is about leaving a legacy.
Exactly.
It's about something that you pass down for. Now, you don't think about, when you think about wealth, you're not thinking about your kids or your grandkids. You think about your grandkids' grandkids.
Exactly.
That's where wealth takes into place.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we don't think at all in reference to wealth. We think into, if we are forward thinking, we may think about our grandkids. Like, we're trying to build a legacy for our grandkids.
Yeah.
But we're not thinking about trying to build a legacy for our grandkids' grandkids.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, if you look at the, let's just for instance here, the Koch brothers, mm-hmm. I believe, those guys are billionaires.
Yeah.
And that's not going to go away.
But then we have to think about the opportunities that they had to be that.
Yeah.
You know, like, now here's real talk. Real talk, it's not until this generation, I think, that we've really been able to see made African American men. You know what I mean? It's taken 50 years to be able to see generations in play mm-hmm. to be able to have wealthy African American people.
Very prominent.
Yes, and that's still, men. You know, those people are still the 1% of the, maybe even a 0.1% of the top 10%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before it used to be, there was always one or two rich black people. But now there's groups of them. You have multiples in each category now. And that is rare, but it's still, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would say we look at forward thinking in the community. I think forward thinking is typically a 2000, you know, what's coming out in 2016, you know, whatever the new ride is or something. But I still think that educating the community and starting, that's one thing that can happen no matter how old someone is,
yes,
what their status is, because if you start off early, kudos. But it's like for my youngest son, put money away before he was born.
Mm, okay.
And by the time he is 18, he's going to have a sizable amount of money for college set aside for him. And that's due to compounding interest. You know, some people look and say, oh, but the market's doing all this crap today and whatever. Yeah, I don't really care what the market's doing today. I'm looking at what the market's doing over 10, 15, 20 years. And having that long-term focus, I think is missing. And it's not because of a lack of will, it's because of a lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
If black people that own their homes knew that if they put an extra $50 a month on their mortgage, they could chop off 2.5 years on their mortgage and save tens of thousands of dollars, they'd probably start doing it.
Yeah.
It's just a lack of
knowledge, a lack of understanding of money. Well, not necessarily money. I think black people understand money. Mm-hmm. We don't understand wealth.
No, I don't think we understand money.
No. I think there's a difference. I think there's a huge difference between money and wealth.
There's a difference between money and wealth. I think the problem is we don't understand money, and so therefore we don't understand how to attain wealth.
Okay, I can see why you say that.
Because our priorities are not fixated on trying to attain wealth. Our mm-hmm. priorities are fixated on how do we get the best Jordans. I need me some Louis Vuitton shoes. I need, you know, a Cadillac Escalade on 25s with this bumping system.
And that's you pull up to an apartment.
But you pull up into a trailer. Like, that's where our priorities are, you know? And so it's not until we shift our priorities and say, sorry, Jordan, we are no longer supporting you.
Which we should support anyway, but...
That's different. But, you know, it's not until we say, we can't afford $250. $250 shoes is useless.
Made in China.
Absolutely useless.
Not even made in the U.S., made in China.
Yeah.
You know?
I read the report on that. It cost him $12 to make those shoes.
And he's selling them for $300, $400 a pop.
Yeah, it's like 340% markup or something like that. It's crazy. But that's here nor there right now. But
that's indicative to, you know, where the mindset is.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, now here's the truth. I think it's because poor people, when you grow up not having...
Mm-hmm.
It is very common. It's very common for poor people, not just African Americans, but just poor people in general. When you grow up not having, it's common for you when you finally do get something that you want nice things.
Yeah,
that you
you're gonna go out and get those things that as a child you didn't have.
Look, it's even simple. Like I have clients that have a history of I'm a therapist, so I have clients that have history of homelessness, and so now that they, you know, have transitioned from homelessness to being housed, they hoard. You know, they turn into hoarders because they don't want to let go of stuff because they went so long without it.
Yeah. And that's indicative of being poor. It's a mental illness too, but still indicative of being poor.
But yes. Imagine, now think about that in reference to generations of people. You know, you learn from your parents, you learn from the people that are around you, you learn from your experiences. Mm-hmm. So if your experiences, if your mom did it, then most likely you're going to do it too. Why? Because you just know that's what they do.
Yes.
You know, you just do what she did. She did it, so I do it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that... I don't know, but I think my bigger question is let's talk about how to fix the problem. You know, because we could debate the problem all day, why we did it, who did it, whatever. Like, how do we give our listeners concrete, proven facts? Like, this is how you fix this.
Well, I'd say start off by cut your expenses. Cut out those things that you don't need. That $5 a day Starbucks habit, 5 days a week. What is that? 5 days a week, 4 weeks, $25, $100, $1,200 a month. It can be saved by simply not getting a $5 Starbucks every day.
Yep.
And then not putting yourself into a lot of debt. Don't try to live above your means.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get them 24s or whatever, don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
Drive your little bucket. I mean, I've seen so many people drive around with rims that are worth more than the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what is the purpose of that? Just drive your little bucket and get good gas mileage and stop wasting money
mm-hmm.
on something that... You know, when you hit that pothole or something, you know, I digress, but don't create a lot of debt. And
Chance, let me just say, can I insert something right there? Mass marketing geniuses out there are going to push debt. They're going to have you believe that you cannot survive without a credit card. That it's impossible for you to purchase a car without a loan. Like, there's no way for you to go to school without getting student debt. You know, student loans. So the marketing companies out there are working overtime at trying to figure out how to sell you and how to get you to believe the hype.
Yeah.
You know, it's good, and so this is where I think it comes into play about not understanding money. It's good to have a credit card. It's bad to get it and then max it out. You don't spend more than you can afford to pay every month.
On the contrary, this is, once again, and this is going to be my debate. My debate is this. If you had the money in your account, why would you need the credit card?
Buy an airplane ticket.
If you had the $300 in your account for your airplane ticket, why would you need the credit card?
You know, I still think there are some companies that require you to have a credit card. Like, they require you to have those things.
But,
you know what I mean?
But here's the reason why they require you. They don't require you to have them because it benefits you, right? They require you to have them because it benefits them. But if you have the things in place, if you have the safeguards in place so that you don't need their credit card, then you don't need it. You know, like, okay, if you have the $300 in your account, why use a credit card? Why not just use the $300 in your account?
Well, like, you can't book a hotel with the cash in your account.
I get it.
They want the number.
I know. I get, look,
and
I
get it. And it's not necessarily, this is kind of off it, but you know, if you think about it, they're looking for the card information. It's not necessarily to go against you, but it's to protect them. Because if you just pay cash, you destroy the room on the way out, they got no way of charging you, right? So if they can charge that card, they got your card information, guess what? We still got you. You know what I mean? So that's here nor there. But, so, again, I'm not sure... I'm not sure if we fully understand as a culture, if we fully understand being rich and being wealthy. I think Chris Rock said it best. He said in one of his comedy specials, he says, being rich, you can blow in one summer with a bad cocaine habit. Wealth, you can't get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get rid of wealth. That's generational. That's going to be passed on from family to family to family. That's something that will never go away. But I mean, being rich is whatever. It's rich. You're okay. Which is why you're starting to see so many, like, you see a lot of rappers these days. They're trying to create businesses on the side, and they're creating wealth. They're creating something they can pass on to their loved ones when their lives are said and done.
No, they're creating, because they're creating all these extra stuff. Because there's no 60-year-old rappers.
Well, I mean, but
being a rap artist, there's no sustainability in it. You can't do it for all your life.
You can't. But at the same time, they're still creating.
I mean, yes, I get it. Yes, they are creating wealth in some instances. You know what I mean? But they're also creating so they can be able to still be able to maintain their lifestyle. You know, and that's the advantage.
Oh, that's the goal, isn't it? I mean, nobody wants to go back.
I think there is an issue, because just because they're still making a lot of money, it's like what's the boxer's name?
Floyd Mayweather. Yeah,
Mayweather is going out there as old as he is, getting beat on because he didn't invest his money. His money should. Wealth is when your money is working for you. You no longer have to work to make money. Money is working for you. That's the difference between a rich person and a wealthy person.
Yeah. You look at someone person, like Bill Gates.
MC Hammer was rich. And he became a rich person can become a poor person overnight.
Mm-hmm.
A wealthy person, so, you know, he'll have to settle for the 75-foot yacht instead of the 100-foot yacht this year.
This year,
though. That was the key phrase, this year.
So, that's really, I mean, how rich or wealthy are P. Diddy and Jay-Z? I don't know, but what I do know is they are diversifying. They are thinking about other things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're living an extravagant lifestyle that's unsustainable if they decided to leave, hopefully they're getting royalties. I mean, my hat's off to 50 Cent for getting into movie production, because you get a very nice royalty you know, behind that that's going to, you know, keep coming in for many years to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The music royalty, that's kind of sketchy. Because as times change and everything, but when you're doing things that allow you to not use your time but are constantly paying you, that's part of creating wealth. So they are doing things to create wealth. But how does the average, you know, average salary in America is $50,000. How does a person making $50,000 a year, living paycheck to paycheck, how does that person begin to create wealth? They said, okay, how do I do that? I'm starting today. And I would say, you have to go through, make a budget. See where your money is going right now.
Mm-hmm.
See where you can begin to trim your expenses.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
So, you know, trimming those expenses, I think, is the first thing. Getting rid of all of the high interest debt is next. Then
I also think increasing your income.
You know, if you can increase your income, by all means, increase your income.
And just let me tell you what that may look like, just for people who may not know. Increasing your income could be, you know, getting a higher paying job, but it could also be getting a part-time job and working, you know, delivering pizzas on the weekend. That's what Dave Ramsey said.
And grinding.
You know what I mean? It may be working those two jobs to get out of debt in order to make it happen.
But getting out of debt is very critical. And then turning, I don't know if I want to throw my personal business out there, but you know, I was divorced, and I had to liquidate some assets, make the ex-wife go away, left me with
that happens when you divorce somebody,
right, left me with $18,000 in my retirement account.
Mm.
In 5 years, I turned that to over six figures. Just through investing and allowing the stock market do what the stock market does.
Yeah,
how do you talk to you?
So, you know, it's not impossible, and it does require some knowledge.
And I think that, Chance, forgive me for cutting you off, but I am going to say yes. It requires some knowledge, and all the knowledge you can find, you can get free with between the internet.
Yeah.
And between the internet and the library and YouTube and all this stuff, like, the knowledge is so available and is out there.
You know, never before has so much knowledge been available to so many, and so few use it. You know, instead of trying to figure out what Caitlyn Jenner is doing or what's going on, you know, I'm guilty of it. I got to watch Power and The Walking Dead. But after that, after I take my 2 hours, I'm looking at what the stock market is doing. I'm looking at where energy markets are going to go. And it's kind of simple to do. You know, find those things that interest you, that you know about. You know, not everybody's going to be into cars and energy. So, you know, that's probably not the best place for them to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, find out those things that you know, if you're into music, look at where the music industry, the equipment, what equipment is hot. Find who that manufacturer is and look at investing money into that manufacturing company.
Yeah.
You know, when Beats by Dre came out, you know, that a lot of people were slept on that, and they knew it was going to be big, but they just didn't know, how do I get into that? And you know, there's a lot of opportunities like that. And within the black community, that knowledge has been lost. But, you know, like I say, I'm a big advocate of self-education, but, you know, how do you know what you don't know? So, you know, telling you know, telling people that those are the types of things that they need to get into. And, you know, even the stock market is not for everybody.
Right.
You know, looking at, you know, a 600-point drop, losing 30% of your total investment on paper is really scary for a lot of people.
Right.
But, you know, the knowledge is that you only lose it if you sell it. Hmm. Otherwise, it's a phantom loss. It's not real. And now, almost all of that's been regained within the same week. And it's just a lot of noise for people to sell newspapers and get people to watch their TV shows. Because, you know, you don't see the wealthy people selling their stocks. Warren Buffett isn't liquidating his assets and portfolio.
Right.
These wealthy people, when the market goes down and it's looking like, oh, it's end of the world, it's going to collapse, they're buying up as much as they can, because if you buy low, sell high. So they're buying it all because it's cheap.
And honestly, maybe that may have been the goal in the first place.
Now, that's a whole other, that goes into market manipulation. Me personally, I don't believe in buying individual stocks, because the markets can be manipulated by wealthy big dollar investors, and it's too expensive for the average person to buy individual stocks. Mm. But doing something like purchasing an index fund, mutual fund that is buys a lot of different stocks within the same industries or across the entire broader market, you know, you get great returns. You know, your money can potentially, typically it doubles every 11 years.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, so with investing as a whole, to me it seems like that's just something that we just need to get the knowledge and education on. Like, mm-hmm. someone, like, we need, like, people that are willing to go into these communities, into majority black communities, and say, hey, let me educate you on not only wealth, but how to create money and invest your money. You know, yeah. If you think about, if you go into the hood or you go, you know, I'm not going to say hood, whatever. If you go into these urban areas where it's predominantly, you know, black, Latino people, what do you see mostly? Liquor store,
yeah.
You know, little convenience stores, whatever. But what else do you see? The doggone rent-to-own places. Or you see the places, what do they call it? The payday advance things. Yeah, the payday loan places. You know, those are just such, it's just such a scumbag way of doing any kind of business. Like, you get a loan for, I don't know how much, but they're going to charge you like 300-400% on that loan. That's insane.
But
and people don't realize, just, I mean, the terms are almost impossible. And you enter in contract that in some states is actually illegal.
Yeah, California is legal. You can do it here. So that's what I'm, you know, getting specific with.
I think something else. I think we need to, as a community, I think we need to, I like to say that we need to have a say-so of the types of businesses that we want in our neighborhood.
Exactly.
Like, I find it a problem. I have a huge problem with the fact that in lower income neighborhoods, in urban neighborhoods, if you want to call them that, that you can find a church, you can find a liquor store, you can find a 7-Eleven, a payday in advance, but you can't find a grocery store.
You can't find a credit union.
You know what I mean? So I think I would love to see more businesses in our community that are thriving. More people to who want to open up business, who want to open up a dry cleaners, who want to open up, you know, profitable businesses in these communities to make it better.
Yeah,
to definitely build it up.
Well, you know, it's twofold. One, the citizens of those neighborhoods need to get involved politically. They need to understand that their voices and their votes matter. Not, you know, their lives matter, but their voices and vote matter, mm-hmm. even more. because, you know, when they have those city hall meetings, when they talk about the next zoning and what stores are going where, they need to show up and attend. You know, you can go into those meetings, and a lot of times it'll be half a dozen people in a meeting deciding, you know, what the zoning is going to be for their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And those half a dozen people, majority of them are, you know, the builder, the contractor, and maybe one or two citizens that are about to get paid big checks to sell their land. And that's it. No one else takes time to find out or to be bothered. And the other thing is there's a lot of fear from businesses and business owners over the crime in those urban areas.
Yes, that
I was going to say that
was
that
one
too.
Of my points too. It's crime. Nobody, like, I'm not going to say nobody because that's just generalizing everybody, but there are people that are like, look, if this is a high crime area, why am I going to take my business into this area? Mm-hmm. And that's just not said by, like, whites or Latinos. That's said by other blacks. They're like, look, I don't want to be in this area where my, you know, let's talk about the Baltimore riots. Like, those jobs, those people that lived in that community, they also worked in that community. They had their stuff burned to the ground, and they're like, look, why should I come back? I wouldn't want to go back.
And not even that. It's that for a lot of people, for a lot of small businesses, a lot of small business owners, it takes life savings. It takes all they have, you know what I mean, to make these businesses come off the ground and be successful. They say most businesses, it takes 5 years for it to become, before it starts turning over profit. So imagine if you're struggling just to keep the lights on and just to keep, you know, mean your product going and keep it going, and then somebody burns you down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would be hotter than fish grease.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to come back.
And I wouldn't want to come back either, because it's completely disrespectful.
Yes. Especially when you employ the people that are potentially, you know, coming in and burning your place down. Like, I gave you a job. Like, do you remember last month when you were, I don't know, $2 short, and I still let you go ahead and get what you needed?
Yeah.
But you want to come in and you want to loot now? Come on. No. I wouldn't want to, if I was a business owner, I wouldn't want to go back. Am I willing to try to invest in my people? Of course I am. I'm a black man. I'm supposed to want to support black anything, you know, as long as it's positive. But at the same time, if it's, you know, if it's destroying me, If I'm not making a profit, I see why people are like, look, I gotta go. I gotta go where the money is.
Right.
You don't start businesses to be
poor.
Be poor and be mm-hmm. friendly. Like, you're doing this because you quit your job, whatever you were doing, and you're now trying to make a profit being your own boss.
Yeah.
And if you're not making a profit, then you're basically saying, hey, I'm giving up, or I can't do it. What was that, Chance?
I said you're a charity. If you're not making a profit, you're that's Father it. Joe's Village.
That's it. You are. That's what I'm looking for. You're a charity. Like I said, it's okay to hook somebody up. It's okay to be like, okay, you know what? You're like 50 cents or a buck short. That's okay. You can write those little things off, or you can pull a buck out of your own pocket and put it in the cash register and make things even out, right?
Right.
But to do that and then you have something like the riots happen, and it kills me when we burn down these businesses that, you know, we burn down businesses that are ours.
Yeah.
We burn down the businesses of people that look like us.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I'm not going to sit up here and go into a long rant about that. I'm just saying people need to be a little more conscious of what they're doing.
Yeah.
When they get angry.
And you know, here's the thing. When you destroy your neighborhood, know that no one else is going to come in and fix it.
No.
Like, and I was really thinking about, you can look at this in reference to, you know, 10 years after Hurricane Katrina. You can go into New Orleans now and you can still see neighborhoods that have been destroyed from a natural disaster, and there was money that came into the city to make the repairs for the neighborhoods. You know what I mean? So the question is, if these neighborhoods didn't get fixed, who you think is going to fix your neighborhoods?
Right.
You know, when there was money to fix those, there's no money to fix the ones that people are burning down, you know? like Compton, it took how many years did it take Compton and Watts to rebuild themselves after the riots?
I don't know the exact time frame, but it took a while.
You know, it takes a long time to. This is not like you burn down the building, you come back tomorrow, and everybody's like, "Oh yes, we bought the insurance investors, the insurance company came, everything is great, grand, wonderful." No, that just doesn't happen like that. You know, it takes years for people to get the money back to go back into investing into their own businesses again. You know, and I'm gonna say this. This is my horse, and I'm this is my last point, and I'm gonna get off the horse.
Go ahead.
This is it.
Go ahead.
You cannot speak, "I'm going to build wealth, I'm going to do better, I want to be a millionaire, I want to have all this money," and you're burning down your own stuff. Like, those two things don't go hand in hand. That's like saying, "You know what, I'm going to get this fancy car, I'm going to put this Cadillac Escalade on rims, and then I'm going to Angela Bassett it. I'm going to take it and put it on fire and walk away."
Did you say Angela Bassett? Yes.
I'm just saying, like, and then now here it is, you stuck paying a car note for a burnt up car. Like, that's exactly the that was a great analogy.
That actually was, because that actually sums it up correctly.
Yeah.
You gotta, you go in and you invest and you live in these communities, and then you take that same business that you just went and got some eggs from, or you went and bought a shirt from, or whatever, you loot, burn it down, and then you get mad when you gotta catch the bus.
To go, yes.
To Walmart to go buy a shirt.
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, anyway. So, back to black wealth. I think that it's doable. I think that is doable. I think it's going to take a whole lot of work and a whole lot of community.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that.
A whole lot of village.
I think it's going to take a whole lot of village.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a different mindset. Because it's, and let me tell you what it is saying. It's saying, and it's something that I've tried to do, and it's really difficult. So it's really hard. It's saying, "I'm going to bypass Walmart, and I'm going to go to the grocery store in the lower income neighborhoods, and I'm going to support that grocery store," knowing that that grocery store does not get good food. It doesn't get the best quality vegetables.
It doesn't
get the best quality meat. It doesn't get ... But I'm going to support them, because if I support them, then they can make the revenue to get the best quality meat and get better vegetables and so forth and so forth.
Yeah. Hey, let me throw this at you guys real quick. We live in San Diego, right? And there is, I cannot remember what it's called, but there's basically a part of the city where it's predominantly, it's just Asians, Kearny Mesa, I believe. Mm-hmm. But when you go over there, they have like an Asian influenced grocery market, right? Where they, yes, can go and get everything. I can't remember what it's called.
Yes, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. But they literally, they'll travel. I've heard people say, "Yeah, well, you know, we'll drive 15, 20 minutes to come over here and get this." You, mm-hmm, know? Like, they support their own. And, mm-hmm, here, you know, and I'm guilty, because I am so quick to jump up and be like, "I need something from Walmart real quick." Or not from necessarily from Walmart.
It could be anywhere.
But I want to go and get something. I want to grill some steaks tonight, right? I get in my car and I make two lefts. And there's Walmart right there in front of my face. You know what I mean? So, is it a matter of convenience sometimes? Yes, it is.
Let me tell you this. Me, as the primary grocery shopper in our house, I try to support the black-owned grocery store for about 6 or 7 months. Mm-hmm. And I had to stop. I was buying all my groceries there. I was buying the meat. I was buying mostly meat, because they have meat packages, so I was buying meat packages. I was buying, like, all types of stuff there, as much as I could. And I had to stop, because their food, the quality of groceries that I was getting was subpar.
I remember when we were doing that.
Yes.
I remember. I forgot the name of the
yes, I'm not going to name the grocery store.
Yeah.
It was subpar, and I had a problem with that, because And it really infuriated me, to the point where I remember standing in the grocery store looking for 93% lean meat.
Mm-hmm.
And they only sold 73%.
Oh, wow.
That was the highest that they had. I was furious because I said, no wonder why African Americans are dying at large amounts, because I can't even get 93% meat in the grocery store. That's a problem.
That is very much so a problem.
And yeah. so when I noticed that, then I started taking a bigger look, and I was like, the meat isn't that good, the quality of meat isn't that good, and I can't serve that to my family.
Yeah,
because
I remember that, because there were some few times we brought some packages of chicken home, and we had to look at that chicken a little different, like. What
it was hormone filled meat?
Yeah.
Yes. Like really, I was looking at this chicken leg, like, is this a chicken or a turkey?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I was confused, I was real confused.
So, and here it is. That brings up another issue of creating wealth. If you're a business owner, a black owned business, have quality product. Have something that people want to come get.
But we cheap.
I mean,
can I speak truth?
Hold on. We're cheap on food, but we're not cheap on going to get some Gucci or some Jordans.
Priorities.
They're under priorities. We're more concerned about what we put on our body than what we put inside of it.
Exactly. And that's a sad thing, man. You know, like you clocking out of here at 60.
Yeah.
Come on.
But then here's, okay, so let me go back in retrospect. Let me problem solve this real quick. So, but instead of me saying I'm not going to support this grocery store, what I could have done is I could have had a conversation with the butcher and said, hey, I can't serve my family this. I need you to do better. When do you get your next shipment of meat so I can get some 80%, some 93% lean meat? You know? So I realized that I am part of the problem. And for that, I will correct myself this weekend.
Okay. That's what's up.
Because I can't preach to the choir and say, hey, I need you to do, you do this, and I'm not willing to do it myself.
Yeah.
You know, that's hypocritical.
Like sometimes I think we need to grocery shop on our way home.
That's logistics. That has nothing to do with this.
I'm just saying.
You know what I mean?
Just throwing that out there real quick. That's all.
So I just think that, you know, we got to do better. I think we got to do better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, Chance, you got anything else on this one?
No. Okay. Let that one alone.
Okay. So, you know what? Let's just go ahead, and because we're recording a live show, let's just roll into the Village Idiot.
Okay.
Let's just roll right into it, dog. You know?
Maybe you should ask for it, because maybe some people got to take breaks.
Chance, how you feeling?
I'm good.
You've been voted off the island, Lady J.
Dang. You see how you do me?
Voted off the island. All right, first story here. Let's look for this first story. Okay, so first story. White supremacist convicted in plot to kill Obama. But guess what he wanted to use to do it?
What?
He wanted to use a death ray device. This is one of your people, baby.
Wow.
This is one of your people. Let's read some of this story, shall we, Chance?
All right. Is he in Florida?
You know what? Let's take a quick peek. Oh, he's in New York. Baby, that's all you. Oh, man.
Whoop, whoop. NY, stand up.
Let's see here. A New York white supremacist was convicted by a federal jury on Friday of plotting to use a remote-controlled radiation device he called Hiroshima on a light switch to harm Muslims and President Barack Obama. After less than 3 hours of deliberation, U.S. District Court in Albany, New York, the jury unanimously found Glendon Scott Crawford guilty of all three charges against him. Crawford's 51, wearing gray suit and eyeglasses, showed no emotion as Judge Gary Sharp read the verdict. So, he had every intention to build a death ray, like from Acme. You know, when he was watching cartoons with, you know, Speedy Gonzalez and all them, he was going to build the Death Ray.
Technology moves fast. We're there now.
Yeah. If he could have actually built the Death Ray and got it going, I at least want to see it work.
If y'all hadn't been messing with him, it would have happened.
You think so?
Folks messing with him.
I mean, but hey, he's the 5150, baby.
It don't matter. Leave that man alone. Let him build his Death Ray.
Yeah, like that.
Well, because y'all, so you can't say we're gonna lock him up for trying to build a Death Ray and wanting to use it, and then be like, oh, I want to see it work. You're either gonna have to say, I want you to build it, I want you to try to use it, and then I'm gonna lock you up, or I want you to build it, I'm gonna lock you up, and then I'm gonna try to use it.
You build it, then you sell it.
That's the yes, creating wealth. I like that. Get your name out there.
Here it is.
Get your name out there. Next story. Chance, this is going to hit you a little bit because you're the resident drinker or the connoisseur of alcohol. This was a story out of China. Chinese woman chugs a $200 bottle of cognac at baggage check because security officers refused to let her take it on the plane.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't know.
She was a sailor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that takes some sailor blood to chug it.
So what I'm trying to figure out is, I thought they wouldn't let you on the plane drunk.
She probably didn't get drunk until the plane took off.
Yeah.
Because right. If you chug it at the gate, I'm going to say you got roughly...
You got minutes?
You got about 30 minutes, would you say?
Probably not.
Before it hits you?
Probably not. She going to get from the gate to the seat.
And it's a wrap.
And at the door, she going to be tripping over that little, you know, that little trip thing that they always have to tell you, like, watch your feet and watch your head?
Yes.
Look, the flight attendant was like, girl, duck, 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 duck. They was playing duck, 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 goose.
That's what I want to know how long before she had alcohol poisoning on board the airplane.
Man, that's another one. Right there, like, ooh, like I couldn't even imagine. Like I've done my share of drinking. I'm not going to get into all that, but to chug a $200 bottle of cognac probably wasn't a small bottle.
Well, I want to know why she thought she was going to be able to take that on a plane in the first place. You can't even take shampoo on a plane or a bottle of lotion. What makes you think you're going to be able to take cognac? Girl, was she crazy?
She was rich.
That's what happened. Them rich folks' problems.
Yeah.
I don't have them problems.
If you can buy a $200 bottle of cognac, you doing okay. Life ain't too bad. Go ahead and keep it 100, you know? Keep it 100.
You see, what she should have done is she should have just shared it, because sharing is caring. So she should have just shared it with all the passengers who were... Are you getting on this flight? You are. Take a shot.
Pour out a little liquor for
that's
my
it.
Homies.
She just shared it with everybody on the plane, and then it would have been. What's that movie? What's the movie with Snoop Dogg in the plane?
Soul Plane.
It would have been like Soul Plane on.
Why do
everybody
I know?
Everybody drunk off of cognac?
Why do I know that?
That's I don't sad. Know. I've never even seen the movie, but that's why I had
it.
To ask you.
I've seen it, but here's the truth. Ain't no fun. The homies can't have none. You know what I'm saying? It ain't no fun. Pass that around.
That's her. She should have just shared with everybody.
Exactly. All right, let's go to the next story. To all my selfie kings and queens, you guys know who you are. Man hospitalized after trying to take a selfie with a snake. Let that sink in, Lady J.
What? What? How you take a selfie with a snake?
He wrapped
around his neck. What? Oh, I'm man. People, and this is out of California too. God. Lake Elsinore, California. That's horrible.
A selfie with a snake.
That's almost local.
Yeah, Elsinore.
That's right up the street. It is.
Yeah. A Lake Elsinore man may have to lose his hand after he picked up a rattlesnake in order to take a selfie with it.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Not like a regular snake, but he chose the poisonous one that warns you that you're getting too close.
Right.
Obviously, he didn't get warned enough.
I'm thinking it's like his pet boa or something like that.
Yeah, like it wrapped his, you know, around his hand or neck or and squeezed him a little bit. And
yeah, he flashed it, the thing got scared, bit him or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, this was a wild...
Going to pick up a rattlesnake?
Yeah, this is a wild rattlesnake. Like, you know, that seemed like the appropriate action to do. Like, let's go ahead and take a selfie.
Yeah, he needs a hand to remind him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 36-year-old Alex Gomez snatched up the snake Monday at his family's ranch. The snake bit his hand, which swelled. His neighbor called 911 and he was transported to an area hospital. Gomez's mother said he is being treated with anti-venom, but that the skin on his hand is damaged and he may lose it. California Poison Control reports dealing with 800 rattlesnake bites annually, with 1 to 2 cases being fatal. Gomez's snapshot happened in peak rattlesnake bite season, which runs from April to October.
Here's my question. Did he get the picture?
Yeah, it says he got the picture.
That's all that matters. I guess it was worth it. It was worth it. He got the picture.
He's going to lose his hand, but he got a picture. He got a selfie with a rattlesnake. Keep it in perspective.
He did what he wanted to do.
There drops it. Mic and walk away. Like, I mean, all jokes aside, no, this is a joke. What the hell were you thinking? You're taking a selfie with a snake, dude. Didn't that little demon on your shoulder say, "Hey, bro, this, you know, I know we do some wild things.
This may not be a good idea.
This one's probably not it, man." And I'm sure the little angel was like, "Hey, I'd go with him on this one. I'm going to concur." You know? Just saying. Think about it. Only you can prevent forest fires. Seriously. You know? Let's roll. Next story. Breastfeeding. Breastfeeding is okay. I'm okay. People want to do it wherever they need to. Women need to do it wherever they need to do it. It's cool.
That baby.
That's right. Everett, Washington. A woman cited for breastfeeding while driving. Not sure how I feel about that one.
Yeah, pull over.
Yeah, I concur. You can pull
over. Yeah, you don't want to, you know.
And it's awkward. Like, that steering wheel is right in the way.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, the kid's latched on and you hit a bump. You know, you crack his head against the steering wheel a little bit.
It can turn out bad.
Yeah, it can, you know, a little. What's brain damage?
A little bit.
Yeah. What's brain damage to an infant? You know? It's okay. Things happen.
His belly's full, right?
What's that?
No brain damage if the belly's full.
Yeah.
What's she thinking?
Yeah, what the hell was she thinking is right? I don't know. I remember when Lady J was breastfeeding. That was rough.
Yeah, it was.
Because Chunky was like, "Look, I'm cool."
He was like, "Give me more. Feed me, Seymour."
Yeah, feed me, Seymour. Oh, man. All right. Let's do this last story out of Texas, Lady J. Call it a night. Woman accused of stealing $3,000 worth of sausage from job.
Where's she work?
A San Antonio woman was arrested Monday, accused of stealing thousands of dollars worth of sausage from her job. Kimberly Carrillo, 28, was arrested after a fellow employee told police they witnessed her selling the links at a nearby gas station.
See, she was the hookup.
Yeah, she's the hookup girl.
Somebody just took the hookup girl, the sausage girl, off the market.
Yeah.
Folks in Texas is mad. Do you know it's summertime? People trying to make gumbo and they trying to get ready. They trying to get ready for what's this holiday coming? Labor Day? And you done took the sausage girl off the market?
Tailgating party.
Exactly. See?
Football. I completely forgot about football season. And I don't even watch football. That's why I forgot. But football season's coming up, and you took the sausage girl off the market?
Off the market.
What? Jesus! That's sorry, like, that's I had like, a moment. I had a moment. I'm
that's
sorry.
Like ratting out the Chick-fil-A guy. Remember George Wallace said, I'm going to go ahead on Saturday night. I'm going to go buy me a bunch of, I'm going to go and buy me a bunch of Chick-fil-A's. And on Sunday, I'm going to give me a little route. And I'm going to slang them Chick-fil-A sandwiches. How would you, you know? I ain't going to lie. I could do a Chick-fil-A after church.
Look.
You know? I don't feel bad. Look,
if y'all haven't heard that, if you haven't heard the episode of Welcome to the Village with George Wallace, you are missing out, man. Yeah.
That was Woo! Definitely an episode where I think I may have peed a little bit.
Yeah, I did.
Because I was laughing
a lot.
It was
so hilarious.
Yeah.
But I'm mad that they took the sausage girl off the market. Yeah. You knew better. Yeah. You couldn't wait to march the snitch on her and tell on her?
You know, she was undercutting him, that's why.
You know what? That's what I was thinking, too. You know, the person that told on her, she probably wasn't getting her cut. She was like, you didn't put in on this. You wasn't even a good lookout.
There it is.
Oh, I'm going to fix you.
There it is.
Miss Kimberly Carrillo.
Sorry, Kimberly, but you're about to go to jail for stealing from your job.
Yeah.
Well, this is Texas. She can death penalty.
I mean, $3,000 worth of sausage. I mean, that's not too bad. I mean,
that's really not it. You really think that's probably the case and a half, maybe two cases.
Yeah. Yeah, not too bad.
But the question is, how often was she taking them cases?
How often and how much was she slanging them for? Because a case of sausage on the street, man, just top dollar right there. Just top dollar.
You know, how do you go to jail and they ask you, you know, what'd you do?
I'm lying my ass off. That's what I'm doing.
You got a felony for stealing sausage.
Mm-mm. I didn't steal sausage. I took an old pork bone, shaves it into a shank, and I tried to kill somebody. That's what I did.
That's your story. You gonna ride with that, huh, baby?
Yep. I ain't stole nothing.
I'm a cold blooded killer.
That's right. That's right.
Woo!
I'm serious. I can't go to jail and be like, you what?
Yeah.
You stole a box of sausage, huh? Oh, okay. Yeah. But anyways, Village, this was our first live show.
Yep, we was on, where were we at? Spreecast? Mm-hmm. Spreecast. We had a visitor. I don't know how to use this thing, so I tried to say hi, but I don't know.
Yeah, I saw them too. I saw the visitor.
Visitor. How are you?
Yes, I saw the visitor, and that's cool. You know, we had one person visit. It's how it starts.
It just starts with one.
Yeah, it takes one. You know, somebody will share this one day. Maybe we can get to a point where we get on a little bit earlier because it is like 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, on our time.
So on our time. So East Coast is like midnight.
True.
So maybe we can try to get on a little bit earlier to accommodate. You know, we'll work it out with Chance. We'll figure something out. But Village, Chance, go ahead and plug your Twitter, sir, because, you know, people like you.
Oh, you know, I still don't even know what my Twitter is.
Oh, it's a damn shame.
It's Chance W. Brown.
Yes, at Chance W. Brown Village. At Chance W. Brown on Twitter. Yeah,
I will say, I look at my Twitter account, and I've gotten some friend requests, but if somebody's got a shady sounding name, I'm kind of leery about that.
Damn, most people have shady sounding names.
I mean, hard guy? I mean, that's
yeah, I agree. Yes, you should be leery of some people. Very much so.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter's different. I don't have any pictures of my kids or anything on there. Twitter is just me acting a fool and plugging different things and stuff like that. So, yeah. Just keep it fun. Whoever wants to follow me can follow me. That's how I feel about it. Lady J.
Yep. You can get at me. Well, here. I am on Twitter at Loving Chanel. But if you want to get at me, please don't tweet me because I'm not going to find you. It's going to be some months and I'm going to randomly go on Twitter while I'm waiting in the line at the bank or something. And I'm going to be like, oh, so-and-so tweeted me 4 months ago.
Wow.
So if you want to get at your girl,
you are the weak link.
I could be whatever. I'll be whatever you want me to be, baby. If you want to get at your girl, Lady J, I'll let your girl on Facebook.
That's the best way.
Welcome. Yes, I am more of a Facebook girl, so you can holler at me on Facebook at Welcome to the Village, the Facebook page. Or I am on Instagram every once in a while, but I don't know how to find the DMs. Or when people send you messages, I can't figure out how to find them. So I'm working through that, guys. Give me a minute. But you can also Instagram me at what is it? It's Welcome to the Village as well.
Yeah, there it is. I'm at Enlighten My Mind. You can also follow me at W2TheVillage. You can email the show, welcometothevillage@gmail.com. You can check out our Facebook page, Welcome to the Village. You can check out our awesome website. Every one of our shows is on our website, and that's welcometothevillage.com. You can leave us a Google voicemail, or I believe even a text message, right, Lady J? You can leave a text or a voicemail. Yep. That's at area code 619-202-1562. Everything that we do as far as contacting us will be in the show notes. So I will make sure that Chance gets into our show notes. And if you can, folks, to my Florida listeners, you know we like joking with y'all a lot. But if you're ever in the area of Melbourne, Florida, go check out Heavenly Touch Dog and Cat Grooming. That is one of our sponsors. Go check them out.
Shout out to Cat. What's up, girl?
Hey. Go check them out. If you have a pet, you want to give them a nail trimming and a good shaving or cutting or whatever it is that the animals need, go check them out. That's Heavenly Touch Dog and Cat Grooming. Lady J, final words? Nothing.
Sorry, it's late, guys.
It's late. We're going to work on this. We're going to sit down with Chance and try to get on a little earlier sometimes. As the saying goes, we love you, we thank you, God bless you. Have a great night.
All right, good night.
Good night, Chance.
Are you in the area of Melbourne, Florida? Are you in need of an excellent dog or cat groomer that loves your four-legged family as much as you do? Well, at Heavenly Touch Dog and Cat Grooming, we love each other just as we love your pets. Family-owned and run, with perfection as our goal. If you would like to book an appointment, please call us at 321-622-6963. Email us at heavenlytouchdogandcatgrooming@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at Heavenly Touch Dog and Cat Grooming and check out our photo gallery of our adorable, satisfied customers. Come visit us in person, 2260 Sarno Road, Melbourne, Florida, 32935. Visit our website for the most current pet-friendly specials, www.heavenlytouch.vpweb.com. With a variety of services to choose from, we are sure you'll be happy working with us. We know your pet will want to come back for another Heavenly Touch.